Welcome to What's Your Problem podcast. I'm here with Jake Wilkins from the Game Changer Training in Milton Keynes, perhaps further afield in the future. Who knows? We'll soon find out. And Jake is going to tell us what his problem is.
Amy, thank you so much for allowing me to be your first guest. Honoured to be here. Honoured for you to ask me to be here. Thank you.
That almost sounded like you were saying that I was your problem when you first started.
No, far from that. Far from that. Far from that.
So for people that don't know who you are, Jake, why don't you give us a quick understanding of who you are right now, perhaps the business that you run right now, and then we'll get into it.
Sure. So Jake Wilkins, I'm the founder of the Game Changer Training. So we specialize in small group personal training. So we bring personal training basically without the huge price tag, giving people a lot more accessibility, a lot more frequency, a lot more accountability, and most importantly, a lot more results. Our mission statement is to improve as many lives as we can and just lift limiting beliefs for people.
You've said that quite a few times, haven't you?
I have said that many times.
So thinking about Game Changer Training specifically, mm-hmm. how long has it been in its current format?
Its current format. Okay, so we've been in the unit that we're in now, which is in Milton Keynes and Gifford Park for, this is coming up 4 years in May. So it's nearly 4 years is our birthday. Previous to that, I was in a little chicken shed, again in Milton Keynes, and that was almost the first iteration of what the Game Changer small group personal training philosophy, methodology was. And that was my client basically had this chicken shed out the front of her house that I rented out as a barn. But the Game Changer has always been my PT brand, but I wanted to create something that wasn't about me. So I never wanted to call it Jake Wilkins personal training, because I wanted to create something that was far bigger than me, that people could get behind, something that other coaches wouldn't mind wearing the badge of, mm-hmm. and that clients could really get behind. I didn't want it to be about me, my face, my name. It was a methodology that I've created over the 15 years of my time in the industry. And that's what essentially the Game Changer is. But in its current form, 4 years, I would say. But like I said, I've been in the industry for 15 years as a personal trainer, working in professional sports to training the everyday average super mum to the everyday gym pop. But small group PT is essentially who we are now and the trajectory that we're going to be staying on for the next 100 years.
So there's a bit of humility in there. So I'm just thinking about what you said about the name. Mm. And thinking about how you decided you didn't want it to be Jake Wilkins personal training. And you find that a lot in small businesses, whether it's in fitness industry, whether it's consultancy, people typically call it after themselves. Was it hard to come up with that name?
I didn't come up with the name. My partner Ali did. So at the time, this is 10 years ago now, we were both living in Spain. So we met out in Spain. She's from Milton Keynes. So she's the reason that I was, and I'll put in big, bold writing, dragged, kicking and screaming to cold, wet Milton Keynes. But we both met out in Spain because she was working there. I was just personal training and I wanted to create, I guess, a business rather than it just, I'm a personal trainer in a gym paying rent, like I've always done. And just, I think at first I wanted to, it came off, I wanted to make diaries for my members to keep their, like their training sessions tracked in. Mm-hmm. And rather than just being like a plain book, I need to stick a logo on it. So we needed to create a logo. And that's where she came up with the name, the Game Changer Training. We sort of sat down together, but she was the actual person who created it. And then at the same time, she sort of was like, oh, I might create this other thing called the Game Changer Kitchen. And we were always speaking about meal prep for my clients. So we created the Game Changer Kitchen and the Game Changer Training literally 10 years ago, but she was the one who came up with the name. And if you think now you've heard the name, how many times that rolls off people's tongues, you literally hear it every day.
Yep.
And I wanted what I'm creating to be a game changer for your life. Mm-hmm. I wanted to change your life.
So what made you move away from the meal prep into more of a cafe kind of based business?
Okay, so I'll fast forward quite a bit further forward. So those who don't know, my partner Ali, she owns Game Changer Kitchen, which is a cafe in Milton Keynes, a hot brunch spot, if you like, award-winning. So I'll put that there as well. Best place to come for breakfast. But she essentially created that. We spoke about that in Spain 10 years ago. Always had it in the pipeline or a dream of her. She used to work in the gambling industry. She used to work in Gibraltar doing that. And when we moved back to, I got dragged back to Milton Keynes, she was still doing that, working online gaming sort of stuff. And she got made redundant because she was pregnant, if you believe it or not. And she actually lost, we went to tribunal, if you can believe that or not, which was ridiculous, but that's another story. And at that time, she had nothing. And I had a bunch of, I had a boxing contract with some boxers, and they always used to say how, oh, we wish you could just do our meals for us, Jake. And I'd be like, listen, boys, I'm training you, let alone cooking your meals for you. So at the time, Ali obviously went straight into having no income at all out of the blue. So I said to her, look, I've got like 10 guys here that need to make weight, cut weight. They need to get on with their food, and they're just lazy boys. Like, there's 10 guys here, like you could create something. And then Ali moves very fast. Like, if she has an idea, she'll, by the time I get home, the logo, the website, it's all done and the boxes are coming tomorrow. She's that fast. And that's pretty much what happened. So that's how that sort of came into tuition. And then that we had that running. And then at the time I was PTing in a fitness first gym, which is by the stadium in Milton Keynes. And inside there's a little cafe, which they used to rent out, and that came available. So we jumped on that and tried to get that. And that was where the first cafe edition started, where we would do breakfasts and lunches and coffees and whatever else. But we still had the meal prep running there. Then lockdown happened, COVID happened. And obviously I couldn't work, I couldn't PT, and I tried to keep what I currently had on an online space. And we had no access to it because it was obviously inside Fitness First at the time. But people still wanted food. People, there was elderly people that couldn't leave the house. There was people that wanted to buy meals for their family and send them wherever else. So we kept doing that. And I was essentially the delivery driver and helping cook and do whatever else we could in between shooting bloody Zoom workouts. And then it sort of changed. I think Easter came or something like that. And it turned into like an afternoon tea box, brownies. Like, she used to be the world's worst baker. And if you've been to the Game Changer Kitchen, you know how amazing the cakes are, but Ali couldn't bake for shit. Like, she was the worst, like, honestly, like, shocking. And now she's the best because she's made literally thousands. But it came from that. And then suddenly we realized that people want unhealthy stuff to make them feel better during lockdown rather than healthy meals for bodybuilders that couldn't go to gyms. So that's where the sort of dynamic changed. And then when we came out of COVID, we moved into our current unit and up popped this pink coffee shop that Ali grew and turned into the first iteration of what it is today.
Do you regret moving away from doing the meal prep and into more of a static business?
That's probably a better question for her, but I'd probably say no, because it was definitely a hard... Something you need to imagine. So we've got like two boxes of food, and if that one had 10 peas in and that had 15 peas in, the macros are off. So weighing the food out, the consistency was so hard, so that you can see why they get made in factories for Tesco's, for Asda, for M&S, because it's just so consistent. So it more belongs in that world rather than a small independent business, because it's a huge operation. It was very stressful. It was long days. It was constantly weighing out food. It was, but there was a need for it at the time.
And that's quite an interesting way to pivot and change. Do you think you've done that quite a bit during your career, if you like?
I wouldn't say Ali definitely has, but not so much myself. So my background was football. So I played high level football since the age of, I've been in academy since I was like eight. So I didn't know anything other than academy football. I never played grassroots football. It was always top clubs. So I was always in my head destined to be a football player. And that was my dream that I worked towards. And essentially 15, 16 is when that first actually happened. So my first life was football. Then I like to say the rug got pulled from underneath my feet. Random injury happened, and it's a business at the end of the day. There's always someone faster, younger, better than you. So they move you on. And that's how I pivoted, if you wish, into the fitness industry. But going back to when I was 18 and I was in the club, part of the deal was that we had to pick personal training, nutrition. We had to pick something to do alongside our football. So that's where I just went, do that one, and didn't really think much of it other than I just had to do it. And at the time, when we used to have mandatory gym sessions, I used to just sit on the bikes and just watch Sky Sports. I didn't actually get involved in the gym. Like, I didn't, it wasn't really like a pull to me. I just wanted to be better at football. And then when the injury happened, I had to pivot into fitness. It was the only thing that I could sort of fall back in, and it's the only thing I could do. So I started going to the gym and fell in love with what it could do for me mentally. It was the only way that I could, it was either go out and I lived at the time in Spain. So it was either go out, drink and take drugs, or go to the gym and find healing that way. Two very different things. Mm-hmm. One temporarily heals you for about a couple hours and makes you worse, where the other one heals you permanently. So that's where my love for fitness essentially came from, because I could see what it could do for you. And then when that happened, at the time, I didn't want to stay in England because lots of my friends were still playing football. I didn't want to stay in Spain because my friends were playing football. So I just wanted to reinvent myself. So I just looked up fitness jobs as far afield as I could get and found a fitness job working as a PT on a cruise ship in America. So I was like, that'll do. And I went there and tried to almost reinvent myself, where no one knew about me, no one knew about football. I didn't know anyone, which is the most important thing. Mm-hmm. And I could recreate who I wanted to be, that like this next version of me. So that's how, I guess, the pivot for me from there, that went. But that was my story from essentially my fitness journey from day one.
How old were you when you went onto the cruise ship?
21.
Okay.
20, 21. I think if I remember, you had to be 21 because of like the laws in America. And I just turned 21. I was able to go and get my visa and start the process.
And do you think you were a responsible 21-year-old when you were on the cruise ship?
Depends how you say irresponsible. In terms of financially, absolutely not. I'd spent everything I earned within the moment I got it. But at the same time, I was the other side of the world. So I had to mature quite quickly. And it's not a salary job. Mm-hmm. You go there and you get paid. It's almost like a sales job. You have to go and we'd do lots of seminars where we'd be literally in the auditoriums or in the theatres, and we'd be on stage talking about nutrition and wellness and God knows whatever else. And then people would come for consultations after, and we'd help sell them nutrition plans, supplementation, that kind of thing. So I had to mature very quickly because otherwise I wasn't getting paid. So I almost had to like fake it till I made it. I was like a 21-year-old. You wasn't allowed to, you had to shave. It was obviously on a ship. So the rules are very much like the Navy. You had to be like clean shaven. So I looked very young. So I used to lie about my age. I used to do all sorts to try to make people buy into me. Mm-hmm. But I had to mature really quickly. But luckily at the time when I first went on, it was like a 44-year-old Kiwi guy called Dennis, who was like the first guy I worked with, and he like showed me the ropes and pulled me under his wing. And it took me about 3 weeks of earning no money to realize, like, shit, I need to figure this out. I need to get good at selling and good at my job to be able to survive. Mm-hmm. So in terms of being responsible, financially not, but I definitely matured very quickly. And I think that was the setting the foundation of the kind of coach I am today. My emotional intelligence is very high. I can get on with most people. I can blend or be a chameleon with who I need to. And it stems from being on those ships in America, dealing with Americans, Canadians, and God knows whoever else. But that was sort of, maturity and responsibility sort of merged there.
Do you have regrets from doing that? Were there things that you think you absolutely would do differently now?
Not one. Honestly. Not one. I made so many mistakes, so many mistakes, but I'm a true believer that everything happens for a reason. And every mistake I made was a lesson. And it forward fast tracked me to the next version of me at that time. So there was absolutely no regrets.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I've heard you talk about before, which I think is very interesting and very apt, is failing forwards. And I think that is something that a lot of people don't really understand, because people want to be perfect from day one. What we tend to forget is that in the first day of anything that you do, so whether it's a job, whether it's education, whether it's doing a podcast, I'll do things, you do things that you think, actually, I could change or do better or filter. It's never going to be perfect the first time out. But talk to us a little bit about what failing forwards means for you.
Yeah, definitely. It's something that I like to live by. And I like to say it's almost like we don't fail, we fall. Mm-hmm. So you fall over and you get back up. What's the other option? You're just going to lay on the floor. That's not an option. You just get back up. So everything is a lesson. And if you're constantly, I'm a big self-reflector. So every week, every month, every quarter, I reflect on myself, my business, my personal efforts, myself as a partner, myself as a father, myself as a friend, myself as a son, myself as a coach, myself as a leader to my team. Mm-hmm. And I'm really harsh on myself, but I think it's really important to be really harsh on yourself, because without that, you're not going to learn any lessons. You're not going to grow. So falling and failing forwards is having the opportunity to stop, reflect, celebrate any wins, but also think, I could have done that better. I didn't like how I handled that situation. I didn't like how I said that. I didn't like how I communicated this. And then you learn from it. Mm-hmm. And I think that applies to how I coach people, because I think it's essential as well. As if you're coming into our space, you're not going to get it perfect from day one, the way you move, the way you understand food. You have to fail. You have to go and learn to be able to learn those lessons so you don't make those mistakes again. So it applies definitely in my industry in terms of coaching and what we do, but it also applies directly into my life as a business owner.
What do you think would be the biggest failure, if you like, that you've experienced?
The biggest failure I've experienced would probably be any time that I've debated quitting and just pulling the pin. You know, being a business owner, sometimes it gets a little bit too much, mm-hmm. and you just want it all just to disappear, and you get fed up. I'll break down, I'll cry. My gym's seen me cry more than anyone else has. They've seen me smile, they've seen me cry. No one knows me like my gym walls know me. But there's been many times where it gets hard, but it's supposed to be hard, right? If it was easy, like we spoke off camera and on your podcast, if it was easy, everyone would do it. This is what hard is supposed to feel like. But when I have those, and I'm going to call them moments of weakness, because that's essentially what it is, I'm being an emotional baby about it. When I've gone, fuck this, I'm out. I'm going to go online. I'm going to go move to Dubai, mm-hmm. like lots of my friends have done, mm-hmm. and earn four times as much as I am. That is probably my biggest regrets for those that hour. And I'm like, don't be stupid, because you're creating something that's bigger than you. That's the whole reason why you started this. It's not about you. It's about everybody else. It's about creating a brand that people can wear, that they can get behind. So the only regrets I ever have is when I've had those tiny moments of weakness going, I hate people. I've had enough.
And in a people business, that's a challenge. That's a challenge.
People, supply, you know what it's like. It's everywhere. The tax man. Yep. I hate people. I'm out. I'm done. So yeah, only regrets is that moment. So those little moments of weakness I've had.
So how does that track when you think about thinking back to your why? Is that what keeps you moving forward?
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, exactly that. Like the reason, understanding what your why is in any business, I think, is really important, unless you're going to go and be a franchisee of a McDonald's, because mm-hmm. you don't have an emotional pull. I do what I do because I genuinely have an emotional pull. I've experienced it myself and what fitness can do for me, and I can see what it can do for others. I've been doing this for 15 years, and I can see how when you do apply fitness and this holistic approach to training, and you make it so regimented, like cleaning your teeth, you are cleaning your teeth, or people that go to the pub, like if you just change those things for coming to train instead, how that can change you as a person, as a better leader, a better parent, a better husband, wife, a colleague. It just keeps you sharp all the time. So constantly remembering why I started and what the mission is, mm-hmm. and always knowing, the way I look at it, it's like, I feel like I'm climbing this huge mountain and I can never see the peak. Mm-hmm. And this applies to anyone on a fitness journey, because I speak to them. I'm a big person who speaks about analogies. I feel like they just land better. So this is how I live my life. There's this huge mountain that I'm trying to climb, and I'm never going to see the peak. I just know it's up there, and I have faith it's there. And often we just look up the whole time. We constantly climb, and we very rarely stop and look back to see how far we've come. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we get to a bit where it's really icy, and all I've got is a fucking spoon, and I need an ice pick. But I've only got the spoon, so I've got to take the spoon in and keep going. But keeping your eyes on the why, which is the mission, which is to impact as many lives as I possibly can and change people. Because even when I look around in society, so today's an example. I was in the hospital with my son. Okay, he's okay, by the way, everybody. And yes, he's in the hospital, so that you get sick people in the hospital. But we're in the I ward. Okay, now in the I ward, the amount of people that were in there, and I'm going to say it as it is, 70%, 80% of people were overweight. Mm-hmm. Okay, their feet were like balloons. They're in there for an eye situation, and 70% of the conversations was about diabetes. Mm-hmm. So instantly, it pisses me off, and you lose all sympathy from me, because that's self-inflicted. Mm-hmm. Diabetes is something that's prevented just by looking after your health, mm-hmm. and you're potentially losing your eyes and your feet mm-hmm. because you're not looking after your health and fitness. I just think, like, why would you do that? So my mission statement really is to try to change as many people's perspectives and lives as we can just through fitness. So it's about always having your eyes on the prize and knowing that that why is there and that mission is there at all times.
So if you think in that way, so if you see that there is a peak up there, but you're not there and you don't think you will get there, when do you know that you've achieved success?
I think that's what the reflective piece is for. So every quarter, I really do like a deep dive and I look at numbers. I look at things that we've spent. I look at the team. I look at the members, the things that we've achieved. So I know that when we've had huge transformations, or I look at numbers, like I said, for example, or even transformations in my members of staff, that mm-hmm. for me is I'm doing the right thing and we're moving forwards. If I can see it in front of me and I reflect on it, I know that we're constantly moving forwards. Because I feel like often, and it's always different in different businesses. If you own, what's an example? If you own, what can we say? If you own a decorating business, mm-hmm. how can you track that you're progressing other than making more money? Mm-hmm. You don't count how many houses that you've looked after. So it's really hard to see there because there's not really a why behind that. Mm-hmm. And if you look at another business like a dog groomer, right? Mm-hmm. Which you might have on here one day, which is totally fine. They've got a why because they love animals. But how can you track your metric of success other than do you count all the haircuts of the dogs that you do, or do you look at your accounts? Where it's very different for my industry because we mm-hmm. generally have a lasting impact. Mm-hmm. If I change your life and you've got children or you've got a partner, that's going to impact everyone else around you. So it's like a ripple effect. So I feel what we do is very special and very impactful. So when people don't prioritize their health and fitness, I think they're mad.
And I think that's a really interesting concept, because when you look at people in your life and think about the amount of them that prioritize health and fitness and say, I'm going to focus on getting my 10,000 steps a day. I'm going to focus on healthy eating. The percentage of consistency is actually quite small, isn't it?
Mm.
Whereas the percentage of people that actually don't do it consistently, might go up and down on a roller coaster, might not do it at all, actually is more like the 80%, isn't it? Or yeah. maybe even higher.
It's priorities. Mm-hmm. It's what do you really prioritize? Someone today in that hospital, in the eye clinic, could have had a serious conversation where the doctor says, we're taking your foot mm-hmm. and your eye is going to fall out your head. Mm-hmm. Is that enough of a wake up call for that person to go, shit, is it time for me to prioritize my health, my mm-hmm. fitness, what I eat, what I, if I move around or not? Mm-hmm. Where does your priorities lie? And sometimes people need a health scare. Sometimes people need to look in the mirror and, as a female, cry or hate the clothes you're in, or you have a holiday and you try on your outfits and you get pissed off, frustrated, and you cry in the corner. Sometimes you need to have, that's your why. That's the mm-hmm. reason why you want to do it. Or you know someone else around you who's got sick and just suddenly died. Like, sometimes it needs to be as drastic as that, or just to be pissed off to go, I've had enough.
Mm-hmm. And when you put that into a business context, it's thinking about that why.
Yeah.
How often do you repeat that with your team?
Every day, like every meeting, every day. Like, our onboarding process is long. So it's not like most jobs where you look at the interview, you come in for the interview, and you might have two or three goes where you sit in front of someone and answer some questions. My interview process is 4 to 6 weeks. You come in for phase one, once I've read your CV and all your cover letter. And most people learn their CVs anyway, right? So mm-hmm. I want to meet the person, and I call it the dickhead test. So if you can pass the dickhead test, you're not a dickhead, and you match up to our values and you seem to come across as the kind of person that my members and my community could blend with and my team could blend with, then you progress into stage two. So you've got to stay committed for that whole process, mm-hmm. knowing that you might not get there at the end, but you need to want it enough. So then they can come in for a trial period where they try out a session. So that's allowing me to see how well they know their own craft. How well do you move? Because I think it's awful if a coach doesn't move very well, you're not practicing what you're preaching very well. So I can't then deliver that to my clients. Then they get given a membership to come for 2 to 3 weeks, as many times as they want. And that's almost like a trip over test. So you can come every day if you want to. If you only come once a week, I know you're not serious. So straight away, you come to the bottom of the pile. Mm-hmm. So I'll onboard three or four people at one time. And the person that's coming the most, the person that's showing the most interest, they're the ones obviously excelling. Then the final test is you have to deliver to us. That could be delivering a topic to us in a chat so we can see how confident you are, or just delivering a part of a session. So again, we can see what you're like as a coach. I don't care if it's right or wrong what they're saying. I just care about how they're doing it, and the rest we can teach. So that process is quite a long one. So if you've passed all that and you've made it into be a game changer coach, then you understand the philosophy behind it. You understand that knowing and what every client's why is and why it's important is important, but also the coach. Like I work heavily on my coaches in terms of in our quarterly meetings, our weekly meetings, about we turn the mirror on them, right? Let's talk about you. What's your goals? Mm-hmm. What's your financial goals? What do you want to achieve this year? What holidays you got planned? Because I think businesses don't do that enough. They don't look after their people enough. And that's mm-hmm. why there's a revolving door all the time, especially in the fitness industry, where if you went and worked for David Lloyd, all they care is you tick the box, you sell the memberships, or you deliver your sessions. They don't care about you, your personal development, what your career path looks like. Where for me, you'll start off as a junior coach, but we then have three layers of a junior coach, three salary brackets, a senior coach with three salary brackets, a head coach with three salary brackets, and then you can go off into office work, sales, marketing, mm-hmm. whatever else. So rather than it being traditional fitness where you're coming in and you're being a manager on shit money, 30K, 32K, 33K, what's next? Was very hard for you to get into regional, but it's still going to be crap money. Mm-hmm. You can stay within this business. You can care about the brand that you're wearing, and you can write your own check when you get up there. So that's how I do it with my guys, to make sure that they're uber bought in and they understand what this means.
Mm-hmm. And how different does that look from the first person that you hired in?
So I didn't have a lot of those protocols in play. Like the onboarding process for the first person was like, I know you, you're a good person. I've got this thing. Do you want to come work with me? And it's about learning from every single member. I've had 9 coaches now. Mm-hmm. And after every single one, it's been a lesson about what did they bring that was great? And what mm-hmm. did they bring that I didn't want? So I'm always trying to build this avatar of what the next coach will look like based on all the personalities that we've had in the past. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I want them to bring different personalities. So I encourage them to draw outside the lines. Mm-hmm. We have standards, we have values that we live by, but I encourage you to draw outside the lines and show off what kind of person you are. Don't clip your wings, like go and show the people who you are. But yeah, of course, the iteration from the first person to the last person has been extremely different, because I'm constantly reflecting on myself and my performance, because I used to be a coach. That's mm-hmm. what my brain tells me. That's what my DNA is. I'm a coach. Mm-hmm. And in my head now, I tell myself I am an excellent, one of the best coaches in the country. But I will say out loud that I'm a shit business person. But one day I won't be. And others will tell me, no, you're a great business person, Jay. But because I'm very self-reflective and mm-hmm. I don't like how I do things, I'm mm-hmm. open to learning all the time.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's an element of when we hire people, we hire them in our own image. Do you think that having a more involved process changes that bias?
Definitely, definitely. So this is one of the ones lessons I've learned recently is we've had a team that have been here for a while. So you have to tick a lot of my boxes, but it's more importantly, it's important that you gel with the team.
Yeah.
So I like to look at it like a football team. If the football team don't gel and like each other, they're probably going to lose on the weekend. But if they respect the manager, they all like each other and they're willing to throw their bodies on the line for each other, they're going to win as a team and lose as a team, and they're going to be gelled together. So I think the integration piece is really important. That's why we have the trial phase. You can come in. It allows me to step back and say, well, how do you get on with the team? Do you look like you've always been here? Mm. How do you get on with the members? So that they can understand what the culture is like within the gym. They can understand the community, they can understand the language that we use, and more importantly, see how the team could look.
Mm-hmm. So if we think about what we're doing for the podcast is to help business owners think, or potential business owners think about how they can do things differently in the future. What would you say has been your biggest challenge in the last 12 months?
So again, my business, I feel, is going to be very different to anyone else that you get on here, unless you get another small group PT person. Mm-hmm. Even my onboarding process, I don't expect one of your other guests Louise, who's got a highly decorated clinic, who's been in the Milton Keynes for 20 years, I don't expect her process to be anything like mine. I don't expect her her struggles to be anything like mine. It's similar because she has clients perhaps, but for me personally, the biggest problem or thing that I struggle with, and it's hard not to, because we coach people, I have to, if you're my client, which you are, Amy, I have to get to know you. So to do that, I have to pull down your walls, I have to pull down my walls, and we have to make a connection. Mm-hmm. So that means I care about you. So if you leave, I care about you. Mm-hmm. So it's going to feel like a bit of a breakup, but it's really hard as a business owner to not be emotional about it, because mm-hmm. I care about you. Mm-hmm. I've cared about you. I've shared, you've shared. We've had to make that emotional connection for me to get the best out of you. Mm-hmm. Where it's not like you're going to come in, I'm going to do your nails, you're going to go to someone else. Mm-hmm. There's been no emotional connection there. Mm-hmm. So it's really hard for me to elevate myself out of the coach mm-hmm. and be the boss or the leader and just go by data, numbers and spreadsheets, because I'm a highly emotional person where I care about every single person in my gym. Mm-hmm. So the biggest struggle that I have had in the last 12 months is trying to go from that caring person who's my natural personality to just being up there and looking at it like a business.
And I think you were forced to do that, weren't you, last year because of injury or health issues, shall we say.
Yeah.
So that meant that you couldn't be actually physically present and coaching people. So that kind of made you take a step back. Was that hard?
It was forced upon me. So that was, mm-hmm. Like you said, it was a good thing. I physically couldn't come to work because of an autoimmune disease that I had. So I remember when I returned back in, there was clients I didn't even know. I was like, who are these people? But when I look at other business owners like myself that are really successful, they're the guys that are sat there as well. And they've understood that they've climbed up the ladder. And mm-hmm. I'm climbing up my own ladder that I've created in my business. So it was really hard, but it was forced upon me. And it almost ripped the plaster off. It ripped the plaster, the band-aid off quickly. It cut hard, it cut deep, and it cut once. That the members that are currently there got used to not seeing me as much and understood that my job is to run the gym so the doors still stay open and the lights still stay on. My job isn't to coach you anymore. So now, during that transition as well, I realized that a lot of my energy has to go less into the members and more into my coaches so that my coaches could be better than me. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was the biggest lesson. And the biggest return on my investment was prioritize my coaches mm-hmm. to get them better at their job rather than me, and this is the wrong word to use, but wasting my time looking after my members, because that's not my job anymore. Mm-hmm. My job is to look after the business and look after and mentor my coaches so that they can then look after the members they have to look after.
I think you set such a high standard that it's hard for people to follow that act as your coaches. But has that made you think about, do I need more people? So there's a more equal balance, because obviously your team at the moment, they do a split shift essentially. So they do very early mornings, midday, and then they also do in the evenings as well. That's quite hard to sustain, or can be quite hard to sustain over a long period of time. So has it made you think, you know, with that enforced step back, you're kind of back in at the moment, but has it made you think about, do I get more people to even that out so I can work on the business rather than in the business?
Yeah, really good question. So I definitely see the direct correlation of when I'm working on the business, we drive forwards mm-hmm. and everything is going forwards. It means there's more money in the bank, more equipment, bigger wages, more investment into the team, into the gym. And when I'm off and I'm on the floor, business does slow down. But when I look at how many more team members do we need to add, we need three coaches for sure. The guys are on 40-hour contracts, but they don't coach 40 hours. We've only got 33 hours on the timetable. So mm-hmm. even if they coach every single session, they still wouldn't go over their hours. Mm. But they have other jobs, roles, responsibilities outside of those. So a typical coach for me would coach 23 hours, 25 hours tops.
Yeah.
Then they've got to make the rest of the hours up, which, again, I'm not a micromanager. I don't care if my team are at home, mm-hmm. in a coffee shop. I don't care. As long as you're keeping my members happy, mm-hmm. do what you want. Mm-hmm. And as long as you're doing your job, I don't care. But those a lot of the work goes on behind the scenes that the members don't see, where it is, let's talk about members, that's who's excelling, who's not doing so well, how can we change this, what systems do we need to relook at, what's the onboarding process, mm-hmm. how can we keep the attrition down, how can we bring the cost per lead down. There's so much more that goes on behind the scenes that the members just see the final act of the day when the curtain goes up and the showman's on stage. That's all the members see. Mm-hmm. They don't see the dress rehearsals, they don't see the change of scripts, they don't see an actor breaking their leg and we need to swap someone out. They don't see those things. But life as a personal trainer is fucking hard. I've been doing it for 15 years. Mm-hmm. And previous to, let's say, the last 10 years before the Game Changer was even made into what it is now, I would do 50-hour weeks every single week, 6 a.m. until 8 p.m. And it would be like a revolving door at hairdressers. Client in, client out, client in, client out. And that's mm-hmm. the only way that as a personal trainer, you can make a living for yourself. Because mm-hmm. if you're doing less than 30 hours on the floor, you're going to struggle to pay the gym rent. Yep. You're going to struggle to pay your taxes. You're not going to be left with much money. So the option is to get really good, really quick, build a good reputation. You have to be loitering around 40, 50 hour mark every week to be good. But at what expense? Because mm-hmm. you will hit burnout. Mm-hmm. I used to go to work and it'd be dark and I'd get out and it'd be dark. And I'd be, if I had you at 6 a.m., you get my best version. But if Mark has me at 6 p.m., Mark gets my worst version. Mm-hmm. That's not fair. Mm-hmm. And then it came when I had my first son that I then realized that I don't have a business. I'm exchanging my time for money and I need to create something that's bigger than me, that's going to allow me freedom to actually be a father or be there for my partner. So then I went to a mentor, someone in my space who was the best of what they do mm-hmm. and said, I need help. And he helped me write out the blueprint to what small group PT model should look like and how it works. Mm-hmm. And I've just been changing that iteration ever since. I work more than 50 hour weeks. I work every single day, but I'm not on the floor stuck where I can't leave when I want to.
Yeah. And I think that's something that perhaps people don't understand if they've never had their own business. So if you have your own business, it doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter if your business is, I don't know, let's say software and you've got clients. It doesn't matter if you are doing a telephone answering service, running a gym. It doesn't matter. Your time is taken up by that business. Mm-hmm. And it is very hard to compartmentalize and say, I've done enough for today, because there's always something else to do, isn't there? And there's always someone else that needs talking to. There's another email that you could answer. Or perhaps if I did this, that will drive up some leads for tomorrow that I can follow up. So how do you compartmentalize or try to compartmentalize? We've talked about reflecting, but how do you compartmentalize and say that's enough?
I was going to say that I don't. And that's one of the biggest things that I'm trying to work on, because like you said, there's the list is never ending. Mm-hmm. So once I've created the meeting notes for tomorrow and I look at next month's programming, then there's an email marketing list that needs to be created. There's Facebook ads that needs to be created. There's onboarding. It's never ending. So I really do struggle to turn off, and I've really struggled with productivity. So I've had to, again, turn to my mentor, because I often find myself procrastinating. I look back on the week and be like, I've not really achieved much. I've not moved the needle. So I've had to go to people to help me be more productive. So I time block now. So I'll make sure that my diary is always laid out the day or the few, this week before. This is the thing I've been trying to do this year from the mm-hmm. new year. I promise myself, put your own training in first. Mm-hmm. And I call it pay yourself first. And it doesn't mean financially, it's paying myself first. Because if I've trained and I'm sharp, because that's the whole reason why this was made, to show, give it to everyone else as well, everyone's going to get a better version of me. I'm going to be a better dad, a better partner, a better coach, a better manager, whatever you want to call me. So really have tried to work on having boundaries mm-hmm. and I'll put those things in. I'll put in my recovery days. I'll put in my ice baths. I'll put in my suku sauna day that I keep missing on repeat all the time or massages that I need to make sure to keep me sane. But I really do struggle with turning off. You spoke in your podcast about after 9, you guys won't check your phone, but I really struggle because I feel guilty if someone's messaged. It's my business. I feel like it's my duty to get back. But what I'm doing there is I'm leaving the door open to say there's no boundaries here, guys. You can come and do what you want. Where if it's David Lloyd and you've missed your session time to book on and you call up David Lloyd at 10 p.m. and say, hey, I've not booked on tomorrow. Can you get me on? No one will answer you. Or they'll be like, did you book on? No. Well, you need to book on. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I haven't. Okay. Well, good luck next time. And the phone goes down. So it's really hard for me to try to switch off. Even when I'm on holiday, I say to even the staff, I'm on holiday, but I'm just working from a different, nicer scenery. I'm going to be on my phone. I'm going to send you voice notes. I'm going to be, because I'm at my most productive state when I'm on holiday, because my brain's going alive. But I feel like if you're a business owner, entrepreneur, it's a curse. Mm-hmm. It's a curse you can't escape, because you're always on. It's like Hotel California. Like, you can never leave.
I think it's interesting that you talk about having a mentor, because I think having a mentor allows you to challenge yourself in a different way, because they come at a problem from a different way, don't they? So do you think that that changed your game? So you talked about having a mentor and perhaps some of the things that they might have spoken with you about. Yeah. Do you think that definitely changed your game?
Definitely.
Or do you think that it was going that way anyway?
It's definitely helped me fast track. Mm-hmm. I've made loads of mistakes, but it definitely helps me stop making mistakes, or recognizing that I'm putting too much energy in one area that needs to go into another area instead. Coaches need coaches too. Like, I'm in the business of coaching, so I don't know anything. And again, one thing I say to any staff member that comes in, you have to have a white belt mentality. Mm-hmm. So having a white belt mentality means that you're going to always be open to learning. We have book clubs, we have self-development things. So I have to live and breathe by that as well. I have to die by that sword. So I'm exactly the same. I'm constantly open to learning. So if I'm stumped with something, I'll go to my mentor and be like, listen, I'm having this struggle with a coach, or I'm having this struggle with members leaving. Can you just look at my, can you look at my data? Could you look at my Facebook ads? Like, what's going wrong here? And I need someone that I can then reach out to, go, yeah, it's a clear problem there. Someone that's done it before me, that someone who's doing it at a higher level than me, that I can aspire to go and chase down. Mm-hmm. So I think mentors in every aspect, in every business, is really important, but I don't know if they exist mm-hmm. in other businesses. I know that my partner, Ali, she's always wanted one mm-hmm. for the coffee shops, but there isn't anyone. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there is one in the other industries, but in the fitness industry, it's very common for someone like me to be a coach, to then be a gym owner, to then graduate and be like, oh, I'll just become a mentor and tell you how I've done it. Yeah. Because I used to keep all my secrets close, but I'm not telling other coaches how I do this.
Yeah.
Now I'm like, yeah, man, like, call me up, come for a coffee. I'll show you what to do, because yeah. I don't see you as competition. Like, you can open next to me. It's just gonna make me work even harder. I'm 10 years ahead of you. You can't catch me. Mm-hmm. But I used to be really closed off with, like, I'm not telling you my trade secrets, but mm-hmm. if I can help someone else, like, I wish there was, and I had that. I wish there was someone I could have gone to all those years ago, like, hey, can you help me? But I've only had a mentor for the past 3 years. I didn't have one 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that if you had other professionals helping you in some of the other areas that you mentioned that you're struggling in terms of, let's say, email marketing, for example, could you pay someone to do that, to help you?
Yeah, definitely. So I'm really loyal to my mentor, because I've known them for such a long time. But I feel like I know how to, I could do this at, I could do this at different levels now. So I could go and open somewhere else. I feel like I could happily move to a different town and reopen. I know the blueprint. I know the mistakes I've made. I know the processes now. So I don't struggle with running the business. It's more like the finances and the more like higher intellectual things, marketing, sales, that kind of stuff. So I feel like it's time for me to venture out and get a mentor that's not in the fitness space, someone that works within a different space that I could potentially reach out to.
Or perhaps a professional that just does those things for you and you pay them by the hour to do them for you.
Or that, which I have done as well with a marketing company. I also pay a marketing company to do the Facebook ads, because I'm a coach. I don't know anything about Facebook marketing. So I've recognized it, and it's a lot of money. Like, I lay out £1,000 a month to a marketing company, because I essentially look at it as like, that's a member of staff. Mm-hmm. That's a virtual member of staff. I lay out another £1,000 to my mentor, because that's someone who can help me. But I see the return on investment.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's the risk that a lot of businesses face at whatever stage they're at, is actually, have we got the professionals to help us? Or have we just got Amy or Jake doing it off the side of their desk, because we're not forward thinking enough to invest in understanding, I'm not a HR professional, or I'm not an IT professional, so I need to outsource
that piece
of work to somebody else. And it's accepting that you don't need to know everything.
Yeah, exactly that.
Are you a tax expert?
Exactly. I feel like there's certain jobs I need to know. Like I've done everything from clean the toilets to hand out leaflets to programs. I've done everything that's required in my doors through in my building. But I pay my accountant to handle anything that comes in a brown letter. I don't want to open it. You direct it to you. You deal with it. You have my bank card. Deal with it. I don't care. I don't want to know. I don't want to lose sleep over it. The marketing company, I'll pay you. My mentor, I'll pay you. I've got a videographer. I'm not a videographer. I'll pay George the videographer. I have accepted that I don't need to, like you said, I don't need to know. I've got this podcast. We pay for a podcast. I'm not going to, what's the point of me setting one up myself? I don't know how to do it. So I pay Stuart to do it instead.
Absolutely.
So I think it's really important, but I don't know how that applies to other businesses and if they have to do the same. If we look at like a dog groomer, is there a mentor for a dog groomer? There might be someone to help them with the marketing, definitely. Is there someone to help them with other things? Like, do you know what I mean? I don't know if it applies to all industries.
And do you need to be an expert in all industries? So do you need an expert dog groomer that's done things from day dot to actually be the mentor for the existing dog groomer? Or actually, are things transferable? And I think there are certain things that are transferable that you can actually talk to people about that are consistent across all industries. How you make people feel in terms of your team. That is consistent across all industries. How you onboard somebody. Consistency. Again, it's a level of understanding that there are some things that are the same wherever you are, whatever business you're in.
Yeah.
And an understanding that actually sometimes you need someone who's been there, seen it and done it to know that when you say, well, the coffee machine broke down for the third time today and I've had the engineer out, what should I do? Or how can I, you know, get a better coffee machine and do this and do that at the same time? That's the kind of person that you want in your life, right?
Yeah. Like I read this in a book once. It said, your problems are not unique to you. You just think they are because you're emotional about it.
But I love that.
Everyone has had that situation.
Yeah.
So again, you can pull someone. You can be having a tax problem. I could call you up. I could call Louise up. I could call anyone up from a different industry. And we've all had these problems. But like you said, just they're blanketed across. Doesn't necessarily have to be within that niche.
So let's think about your piece of advice then for either budding or existing entrepreneurs. What would you say is something that you've learned in your time as a business owner that you wish you'd known at the beginning?
So take risks. I think you have to be a risk taker. And I think naturally you are a risk taker if you're an entrepreneur because you don't know if it's going to work or not. You've got to take risks. You've got to back yourself. And you've got to reach out for help if you need it. Like I said, in my industry now, it's very common for other gym owners to reach out to each other. I'm experiencing this. How have you got over this? So I feel like if you do have the opportunity to get mentors or someone that's been above you that can help you show you the way. But you've got to take risks. I feel like the risks is the biggest thing. People are too scared to even start businesses because they're too scared that what if it fails? Fail forwards, learn.
Yeah, absolutely. Get out there, do it.
Yeah.
Just do it. Do it anyway. Feel the fear.
Do it anyway.
Do it anyway.
The book that changed my life, that Amy.
Yep.
That really was.
It's something that really people kind of accept. And I wonder whether there is less risk taking. There's a lot of young people that maybe feel like they're going to be a YouTube star. And you're kind of like, okay, what are you going to video? What's going to be on the video content? Oh, I don't know. I'll be opening boxes. Now, for me, I find that absolutely phenomenal that people will watch other people opening boxes or opening gifts and seeing what's in that box. But that is a genuine role on YouTube. So my question to you is thinking about maybe even the things that you don't know about, which is quite hard to do. What do you think is the next biggest trend in the fitness industry? Your prediction.
So obviously I've been in it for 15 years. So I wouldn't say things come and go, but you see things get introduced. So the wave of body pump, CrossFit, but they're still prominent things. I just see them as just different entry points to fitness. I feel like fitness, regardless of what you do, whether you swim, whether you go to CrossFit, whether you come to a gym like ours, whether you box, whatever, everyone needs to be doing it. And that needs to be like a non-negotiable for your life. Right now, your body needs it mentally so you can be a better version of you, but the future of you needs it more than you'll know because you want to be 90 better, wipe your own arse. But when it comes to trends, Pilates, reforming Pilates is blowing up at the moment. Mm-hmm. But again, like, I don't want to shoot it down. But is it a gimmick? We won't know. Is it good for some people? Mm-hmm. That as long as you're moving your body and you're enjoying it, it really doesn't matter what you do. You're going to get better results doing one thing than the other. Like if you come and you weightlift or you resist, let's not call it weightlifting because people get scared of the word, but if you resistance train, you're going to get far better results than you would if you went to spinning or you went to reformer Pilates or you went swimming. But it doesn't mean that that's not a good thing. You can still do those things. HYROX obviously is massive at the moment. A lot of my members joke and laugh because they know that I'm not the biggest fan of it. We are affiliated with it because I know how popular it is. I think that will eventually burn out as well, just purely because it is so hard to get tickets for it. It's turning into as hard as getting bloody marathon tickets. And also, it's not sustainable to train like that all the time.
Yeah.
And I feel like you're going to have to do that for a year to realize that, oh, my HYROX training doesn't make me any slimmer. It doesn't, I'm getting injured. I'm spending more money and more time out the gym than I am in the gym. So I feel like sometimes these trends, they just have to ride the wave. But the next thing, I don't think there is a next thing. I feel there is always going to be a next thing. But what I mean by that is training and the philosophy of training has been around since the Roman days. Like bodybuilding, lifting weights has been around forever and it's not going anywhere. You can't dress a squat up. You might want to go stand on a Bosu ball and start skipping whilst you're squatting. But again, it's a gimmick. You might want to do it on a trampoline. That's come and gone. But the fundamentals are the fundamentals. Everyone needs to squat. Everyone needs to lift weight. Everyone needs to move their body. And it's just a vital piece of what you need to be doing. But yeah, gimmicks will come and go.
Okay. And any final thoughts for our budding entrepreneurs?
Final thoughts for budding entrepreneurs? How do you want me to leave it?
What's your biggest success?
My biggest success is probably, again, this is nothing to do with business. This is me personally. It's probably proving myself wrong that I could do it. I grew up in a middle-class family that worked really hard, but we never had much money. But I had lots of friends that were very rich based on the school that I went to. Mm-hmm. So I was able to have a snapshot into what really, really wealthy people's life could look like. Going to Monaco for the summer, for example, where not even I could do that now. Mm-hmm. But having a snapshot into that. So I thought the only way for me to ever have success in my life would be to win it, literally win it, or be a football player. Mm-hmm. And when the football dream closed, I didn't think I'd ever be able to reach the heights that I've reached. I'm not saying that I'm rich at all, but for me, rich is having freedom. Rich is having the opportunity to take my son to hospital today. Didn't have to call up my boss and say, I need to take a sick day. I can do what I want whenever I want. And I'm creating a life that allows me to do that whilst impacting other people. So my biggest success is looking back to that younger person and saying, told you could do it. Like, you just had believed in yourself from the very beginning because you've done it, you're doing it, you're doing the thing. You've impacted hundreds of people's lives. That's a ripple effect. That's that you don't even know that you're affecting. Even if it's people that follow me on Instagram that I've never met before, videos that I put out might just help someone go and take action. So the biggest success, I don't know if I can get that word out today, is just that I'm able to do the thing that I always wanted to do. And work doesn't feel like work. I get to wake up and I'm excited I jump out of bed.
And that you change that limiting belief in yourself.
In myself and in other people.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So thanks very much for Jake to joining us on the podcast today. And we're looking forward to hearing feedback from you about what you liked and what you think we can improve on for next time. We'll catch you on the upside.